Last week we started, we went to the book of, we picked up where we left off last year when we left 1 Samuel. You remember when we left 1 Samuel, that was the death of Saul. And when we turned the page last week, we looked at the, we reminded you of chapter 1, where David went through the funeral procession and the weeping and the celebrating at the same time. So today I want to make this statement. Let's open the book. Why? Because God is still speaking. God is still speaking. I made this statement last week, and I think it's so important right now. A lot of people say, I don't know. I've never heard God's voice. Well, don't tell me God's not speaking or God is silent when your Bible is closed. And when you open the Word, what is going on there? God is speaking. God is speaking. Don't you sometimes wish, gee, God, I wish you hadn't have said that. But God is speaking right now. In our introduction last week, I told you in 2 Samuel, we're seeing a story of faithfulness. We're seeing a story of failure, but we're also seeing a story of fortitude. 2 Samuel covers about 25 years. The first 10 chapters of the book of 2 Samuel, you're going to see David as a king, as a great warrior, a leader of God's people. I told you last week that when we met Saul, Saul was the first king of Israel, and David was the greatest king of Israel. And this is how we do it. And it's going to be the standard fare for the first 10 chapters. And then in chapter 11 through the end of the book, there will be trials, temptations, and certainly tribulations. You know, I think the scriptures, I don't think I said it eloquently enough. Maybe I'll try to do a little better right now. The scripture is filled with peaks and with valleys in the lives and in the stories of people. Many times you see a story in another, what you would call philosophies or in other religions, and when you look at those, you will see everything was great and the leader was hunky-dory, infallible in the stories. But when you read the stories of the men in Scripture, whether it was Abraham, whether it was Noah, whether it was Moses, whether it was Joshua, whether it was Samson, whether it was now you're looking at Saul, now with David, you were seeing, you know what they are? They're real people. Aren't you glad real people? Aren't you glad the story is about real people? Because you wouldn't measure up if it was all about superheroes. We would be frustrated and we would stop. But to know that these people and to hear some of the writings of some of these people, when they called out to God, you go, I felt that way too. Now, we live in a time where we can't admit that, you know what I mean? But man, when you read, there's not a one of you that hasn't looked at a situation where maybe you thought you'd been serving God and behaving yourself, and you see somebody, Lord, look at them. They're getting away with everything right there. And there's not a one of us that haven't either thought it or prayed something like that. But God is faithful. God is good. I am so glad that this is a book about people, but it is about a Savior that takes a person and changes them and redeems them and calls them kings and priests as the book closes. That ought to excite you right now. On top of it, it's the best retirement plan you can find anywhere right now. I call this story of these next few weeks, it's going to be a good many weeks ahead. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. We heard that, we think it's always been, but the first time that was said in 1961 when ABC was looking for something to fill the afternoon programming, and a man by the name of Rune Arledge, who was a programming genius, began to say, well, what if we start covering these sports? We'll cover the sports where it doesn't cost much, and the rights to this, we don't have to pay extensive rights to actually broadcast it. And we watched everything, and we'd watch bowling, we'd watch skiing, we'd watch tree cutting, we'd watch arrow shooting, we'd watch skating, we'd watch all of these things, and we'd watch it, and we'd wait for that opening with Jim McKay's great voice and doing the voiceover and the thrill of victory, the hands up in the air, and then the agony, the guy went off the skiing thing and just wiped out a whole side over there. And each time you went, oh, that had to hurt. But that's the first time we heard that. Well, that's really David's story. We picked up last week, and just cherry picking right now. In chapter 2, verse 1, the word said, after this, David asked of the Lord. Now, what is after this? This is after the death. This is after the burial. This is after the mourning period for Saul and for Jonathan. Remember that story? I won't go into it. But after this, it says, David asked the Lord. Now, stop there. I stopped there last week for a moment because this is the priority set up for everything in the book that will follow. It is the priority set up for you and what's going to happen to you. After this, what do you mean? Well, what? You just plug it in. You just plug it in. After this, after your biggest victory, after your biggest defeat, after your biggest discouragement, after your biggest failure, after your biggest joy, after this, David asked the Lord. I don't care for the word asked. I like the King James word. It said, he inquired of the Lord. Isn't that a good word? Yeah, they really inquired about you. We've sung it for years here in New Orleans. He inquired of the Lord. I love that statement. That's a full, broad-throated word there. He inquired of the Lord. And he's asking the Lord, and now this is after the Ziklag situation. David is really seeking God at this point. And here's the thing. You're going to get sick of hearing it, but you're going to hear it every week at some point in every message. Every time David inquired of the Lord, everything went well. Now, let me take that for today. Every time Lynn inquired of the Lord, it's going to go better. Every time you inquired of the Lord, or me, every time he inquired of the Lord, it went well. But when he did not inquire, he got into trouble. Anybody raise their hand and go, yeah, huh? So what is our lesson here? He's asking him, should I move back to the town of Judea? It's a two-part statement in verse one. Number one, David inquired of the Lord. And the number two, God answered. They were still on a talking basis. Now, you'll do a lot better in your life if you and God remain on a talking basis. And just because you're not talking doesn't mean he doesn't know what's going on. It's not, I better not tell him this. We fool ourselves that way. And he says, where should I go? And he told him, go to Hebron. And that was going to be a place where when he finally showed up, all the people were going to be able to identify him as a leader. He's crowned the king when he goes back, but it's only a partial victory here. This is not the full kingdom because the kingdom is divided. The kingdom was in conflict. So we move to the third chapter now, and I'm still set because this is so new for a lot of us right now. The first verse of chapter 3, that was the beginning of a long war between those who were loyal to Saul and those who were loyal to David. That is a story. That's a thread we'll have for most of today and most of next week. But notice this other statement. But as time passed. Now, can I just tell you right now, time will always pass. You're in a trial, you're in a tribulation, but the time will always pass. The old timer, time is filled with swift transition. Naught on earth unmoved will stand. Build your hope on things eternal. Hold to God's unchanging hand. The clock doesn't stop. Sorry, Mick, time ain't on your side. But Keith Richards keeps defying the clock. That's what I don't understand. As time passed, notice this, David became stronger and stronger. What do you attribute that to? David inquired of the Lord. While Saul's dynasty became weaker and weaker. This is really good. That is a positive affirmation for God and his man and God's seal of approval. I'm not going to read it all right now because I read it last week. Not 10 verses, not the next chapter, the next verse. Now, things are going well with David. He's probably getting a little heady with his victories here. They're bowing to him. He's got the chariot. He's got the driver now. He's got it all right now. Well, he gets to Hebron, and this is a 7-year period. I'm not even going to read it right now. But you go to the very second verse right after this. David was getting strong. The very next verse, it said, and these are the 6 sons born to David in Hebron. 6 sons, 6 baby mamas. He's compounding the felony. Obviously, he's not inquiring to God about everything, is he? He's compounding the felony. David had hit a point in his life where he obviously wasn't inquiring on the Lord quite as much. Things are getting unreal at his house. This is where I stopped last week. But let's address the elephant in the room with about this situation, with about all these girls and all these kids. What about that? I thought he was a Bible man. Yeah, he was a Bible man. But you know something? God, I told you God was keeping score. God understands. You say, well, that was all right, and he's got these sons. But if you would look, if you would look, there's something very, very unusual. There was one who was birthed to the third lady. The third son, his name was Absalom. His mother was the daughter of a king that, if you read the very last part of 1 Samuel 27, verse 8, David killed the king and likely took the daughter captive. And this is the son she birthed. And the son that she birthed, his name was Absalom, and he became the greatest heartache for the rest of David's life. Well, the rest of Absalom's life, put it that way. Don't you know, he might have taken her, you are mine now. He wasn't inquiring of the Lord when he pulled this trick. And when this baby comes forth, she's not telling the baby how great of a warrior your daddy was. She's not saying, man, you ought to get him to tell you the story about that giant. Get him to tell that story when he killed the bear, when he killed that lion. Get him to tell those stories when he, get him to tell. No, she wasn't. She was saying, he stole us. He did this. He did that. And the seed of that thing was planted in that boy, and the crop that came in was a crop of hate, anger, bitterness, and devastation to a family. This wife's situation didn't sit well with God. Warren Wiersbe said it this way. He said, the dynamics of David's family, meaning the multiple wives, the many children, and the various relatives in the places of authority. You can see conflict. He's related to all the people that are fighting right now. You'll see that in a few minutes. This created problems for David, and they were not easy to solve. How do you get to this point? You stop inquiring of the Lord. Now, let me just say this. There are many things that were done. Don't put it up. Don't put that up yet, Mary Alice. Don't put up the next line there. Wait until I ask you to do it. There are many things that you see, and I told you last week, there's a lot of things I can't quite understand the fullness of it because of a cultural situation that was there. And I'm gonna show you the confrontation we have in a few minutes is actually about all of that. I don't understand all of that, but I do know that God had spoken previously. God had spoken previously in Genesis chapter 2 as the book opened. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cling to that wife, and they will become one flesh. They will come together. Some of these things were traditions. When you conquered a king, you appropriated what he had. Some of it was actually out of, when you read like the Ruth and Naomi stories, some of it was not a lustful thing. Some of it was an honoring of the husband leader, and they took them in, and I will take care of you, and you will become a part of my family. You will sit at my table now. I will help educate the children. I will sow into them. It was not a lustful thing. It was an honor of honoring the ones because they were alone, and in that culture, they could not take care of themselves. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you see some intertwining there, but this is not the case in this story right there. And you say, well, it was tradition, and they got away with it. No, they didn't get away with it. Here's what I said, how can I write this? And I wrote this statement this week. Many of the things they did out of tradition, put that up now. Many of the things they did out of tradition were not God's tradition. You got it? And they were done without God's blessing. Yeah, I'm telling you something strong here. Many of the things out of tradition were not God's tradition. That's what happens when you don't inquire of God, especially in those big decisions. And they were done, obviously, I could add that word, without God's blessing on their lives. Here's another thing. Look at them over there. They're not living for God. They're getting away with it. They're getting away from. Let me just. I've read this enough, and I've been around the tree long enough to tell you this. Just because they were still alive didn't mean that God approved their behavior. Just because they were still alive doesn't mean God approved it. Well, God would have killed. He did that at times. But just because remember, God was still going to teach a lesson for me today that a harvest is going to be bitter that's going to come forth from that. So if we can look and learn from those mistakes, he laid out the schematic, the plan in the second book in Genesis. God gave them also commandments about what, and Moses gave them laws about the family and about that situation and about lusting for another one and trying to take another one and having something that doesn't belong you and steal and in the family relationship. He even further nailed it down as we went into the new covenant. When Paul was even talking to Timothy and talking about an elder, a deacon, someone who was going to serve God. And I think that's all of us would be the husband of one wife. Because that focus there should be on that one. Can you imagine the focus? And now David didn't even learn from this situation. You're going to find out in the next few days. But just because they were still alive and running around doesn't mean God was blessing them. In 2 Samuel, we learn that although God forgives and God restores, because restoration is a big theme, by the way. It's a theme you ought to hold on to in 2 Samuel. But a hard truth that we learn in 2 Samuel is that we're not absolved from the consequences of sin. And yes, it has consequences. A man does reap what he sows. But look at it in the positive way, reaping of sowing to God. Lord, I love you. That comes back to us. That comes back to us right now. Here's what we got to decide. This is the war. We've got to decide, are we going to be moved with our taste, with our personal drives, with the things that we want to do without inquiring of the Lord? Here's a simple statement. If emotions are guiding your life, then the scriptures are not. If emotions are guiding your life, scriptures are not. And we read a strong word of life here. And this should encourage all of you today. You should not be down for 1 minute. Man, we all have emotions and mixed emotions. And we have those things. But when we don't know where to put those things, what does the word say? Land in that. David inquired about the word to the Lord. So here we are. We left last week and we stopped by telling you who the six new sons were. And as we pick up in our story in chapter 3, Abner is still having contention. He's from the other side with Joab. Joab was one of David's nephews. Joab was a fierce warrior, but he had ADD really bad, man. He was pinging. He's either going to pray for you or kill you. You know, he was up and down. He was one of those kind of guys, you know. And he was hot-headed. He was ruled more by his emotions. And a lot of times some of the moves that he made were strategic moves to solidify his stance and his place so that David could see him in the kingdom there. So we talked about the other war in the other chapter. Well, here we are after the story of the children. That's thrown in the middle, and the story picks up. And as the war, in fact, the King James says, the long war between the house of Saul and the long war between the house of David went on. Abner was Saul's cousin. Now, last week, I gave you a thread of who Abner was, although he was on the other side. I told you David was connected to all of them. The story goes that after David killed Goliath, and everybody's kind of coming out and looking at it, that it was the man named Abner that came and said, come here, I want you to meet Saul. I want you to meet Saul. And it was Abner who brought him as a young boy and said, here's the champion right now. He was Saul's cousin. He was on his staff, somebody that Saul could look at, and at least a familiar family face that he could trust with a little bit of authority. But it was Abner that brought him to Saul for the very first time. So now here he is. He's become a powerful leader, it said. He's connected to those loyal to Saul. But there's unrest going on in the ranks there right now. There was a long war there. So one day, Ishbosheth was Saul's son. Now, Abner was working under him, okay? Now, Ishbosheth was the successor to the king. Now, remember when I said the story of the tradition is that when you conquered, when the king died or you moved into that place and were put there, automatically everything the king had was yours. You remember that little statement? This is going to be the core of the fight here. So one day, Ishbosheth, who is the son of Saul, has accused his cousin Abner of sleeping with one of his father's concubines. I told you, God, they might have done things, but it wasn't blessed of God. And he was furious, and he goes nuts, and he starts screaming at him. And this is a combination of being offended and being caught. Okay, this is a combination of some things here. He said, am I some unclean dog to be kicked around like this? And isn't this guilt? After all I've done for you, after all I've done for your father, your family, your friends, all of them, and this is my reward, you find fault with me about this woman? And he allows his anger, again, the emotion is driving him, not the word driving him. He said, all right, and he decides to slap a curse on him. He say, may God strike me. And even, I mean, he makes a promise with his mouth that he's going to have to cash, and it's going to be the death of him. May God strike me and even kill me if I don't do everything I can to help David. Yeah, I'm going to the other side. That would be like Sean Payton tomorrow morning. I'm going to the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow morning, and I'm going to be, this is the very same, you are seeing it right here. This is, I'm going over the fence. I'm joining them. I'm bringing everything with me. I'm going to use my influence. I'm going to wipe you out right now. Do you see the story here? And I really cracked up at this line here. He said, I'm going to help David get what the Lord had promised him. Wow. Even the heathen know what God has promised. It must have been working on him inside. He was hair triggered for anything right now. You know that. And watch this statement. So, verse 10, I'm going to take Saul's kingdom. I'm going to give it to David. And I am going to establish the throne of David over Israel. Stop right here. The words, the throne of David. When you see this here in Scripture in 2 Samuel, this is the very first time you see these words. This is the very first time. Now, out of all of the foolishness and all the things that are going on, don't get your eye on that. Keep your eye on what's important, what's going on here. God is positioning. God is using imperfect things to position for the Messiah that's coming down the pike in some years down the road. Notice that. That's the first time the phrase is used in Scripture. Over Israel as well as Judea, all the way from Dan. He's showing him how far. And in verse 11, Ish-bosheth didn't dare say another word because he was afraid of what Abner might do. He was so loud and so forceful, he thought he was going to go postal on him right there, right then. He felt betrayed, and he felt betrayed. Then on the other part of it, there was a flesh indignance that was in him. And a lot of times people get up and say dumb things and get way out on the limb there out of a fleshly indignance, that fake, I'm indignant, I'm offended, I can't believe you. And they get way out there and they make weird promises, and that gets us in trouble. Again, when the emotions control us rather than Scriptures. Are you seeing a picture here? You're looking at me like, let's get it. He felt betrayed, or was he just fleshly indignant? Now, here's what's wild. Whatever the answer is, whether he really felt like he was betrayed or whether he was looking for an out, and a lot of us are in things like that when we blow off, or was he just in a fleshly indignant, whatever the answer really is, here's what you need to know. God can use seemingly unrelated things to bring his plan together. It doesn't seem like any of it relates, because watch, verse 12. Then Abner. Now, part of Abner's personality, he was a negotiator. He liked to bring deals together. There's some of you looking at me right now, and you just love to bring deals together. You're laying there thinking, see that building over there? So-and-so, I bet he could use that building. Now, my job here is to make him think he needs that building and show him why he needs that building. Pray for me while these people, they need this building. They don't even know it yet, and they don't know it. But somebody, a master comes in and brings them all together, and they're all sitting there at the table, and the bottom line, they both think it was their idea. No, it was the master negotiator that brought it all to there. The great negotiator. So Abner, in his negotiating, he's already put the plan together. He's already figured it all out. Now he knows what to do. He sent messengers to David. He said, doesn't the entire land belong to you? He's like a good lawyer. He never asked a question that he doesn't already know the answer to. You got it? Because he knows why. He knows the covenant. He knows the story. He knows the family. Doesn't the entire land belong to you? So make a solemn pact with me, and I will help you turn over all of Israel to you. Now, to condense the story, because I'm not going to read all of it, David comes back, and David, also being a negotiator at the time, again, he's not quite inquiring of the Lord yet. Y'all remember when we read in the other book there, and we read the story of Saul's daughter that David really took a liking to there. And at the beginning, she liked him too, you know. And he asked Saul the story that happened later on. She was taken away from David there, okay? And he goes back. He said, oh, I'll negotiate with you, but only on one condition, that you bring back my wife, Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come. And he sent the messenger back. He said, I want my wife back. He said, because I killed 100 Philistines to get her. This is the story he's telling. And I'm condensing this because I'm not reading it part by part. So what happened is, Ishbosheth then says, well, I'm going to take Michal away from her husband. And she did. Well, there's weeping and lamenting there. Again, he's compounded a felony. He's pulled another family apart because David was being ruled by his emotions and other things versus what the word says. So Abner, he talks to the elders. And he said, and Abner being the negotiator, we're not going to read it, but it's in this passage. He meets with the elders and he says, now look, for some time, I want you to know, on the souls of my grandchildren, I have wanted to bring us all together with David and make David our leader. He's eloquent. He's really, really good. I've wanted to make David our king. And now is the time, for the Lord has even said, you get him, quote the Lord, they're going to buy it every time that he thinks. I've chosen David to save my people from the hands of the Philistines. And he went on to tell David. Well, anyway, the deal is coming together. And we pick up in verse 20 that we'll read here. So Abner gets 20 of his guys, and they go to Hebron there's a big conference table going on there. David entertained them with a great feast. David was pulling this, he was putting the deal together. So Abner says to David, let me go. And by the way, that one sentence there, that party could have gone on for days, and likely did, with the whining and the dining and the celebrating and the rejoicing and the walls coming. Hey, remember that time and the arms are on the shoulder and they're singing together and whatever like that. Remember those things? Then Abner finally says to David, this is too short sometimes. You gotta put something in the meat there. And Abner said to David, I tell you what, let me go. I'm going to call an assembly over all of Israel to support my Lord and King. They're going to make a covenant with you and make you their king, and you'll rule over everything your heart desires. Music to David's ears. But you know what Abner was doing? He was making sure he had a front row seat. He was making sure he was going to be taken care of at the same time. Aren't you glad you see human nature as you read this thing? And you think you've got, no, yeah, we all fight these crazy things. So David sent Abner safely on his way. Now, isn't that a wonderful ending? Isn't that good they've been able to come together? Isn't that good they're able to agree on something? You go do it, and God bless you, brother. Come on back, we'll do this. And, man, we are singing. We are brothers. We are so good. But again, there's no record of David in this deal seeking the Lord. Well, the story goes on. We're not going to read it. I'm just going to hit some hot parts for you right now. The story goes at the end, near the end of Samuel, 2 Samuel 3. Right after Abner is gone, all of a sudden you're hearing this boogity, 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 and you look and there's a cloud of dust there, and here comes Joab riding the fastest horse, and he gets her up there, and he stops, and the dust flies when he stops the horse there or whatever he's on, and he gets off, and they've come back from a raid. They've got a plunder. Joab is waiting for the cheers. Joab is waiting for all of it right there. When he arrived, he'd been told, hey, dude, we've just had a big, he sees the party has gone. David's just cut a deal. He's just made a deal, man. Abner has just been here visiting for days, and the king has sent him away safely. This is all going to come together. Again, Joab, always jockeying for position, he's ticked off. His emotions are ruling him. Not the word, not what God would say. Verse 24 later says, he rushed the king. He ran up to the king. What am I hearing? What have you done? And why'd you let him get away? You know perfectly well he came to spy on you. He came to find out everything. He's off, and he's coloring him in the worst way possible. Do I think Abner's intentions were totally pure? No. Nor did David. Of course, not did God. But God was using an imperfect situation to bring it together. But Joab was cocked, and he was ready to go right there. You know well. Well, here's what happened in 26. So Joab leaves David in a huff, they ought to say. He left David in a huff, and he sent messengers to catch up with Abner, asking him to come back. They found him at a well. They brought him back, though David knew nothing about it. Now watch, this is a very unusual, there's a lot of things going to unpack here. So Abner arrives at Hebron, that is the city where God told David to go to. Joab takes him aside at the gateway. Now, let me just read the story, and I'll tell you what I think. He took him aside at the gateway as if to speak with him privately. There's a deception going on. And he probably had his arm around him. Buddy, we need to talk. And as he's walking him out of the gate to the side of the city, and all of a sudden he takes a knife and stabs it up into his stomach as a revenge for killing his brother. Remember that story, the three boys were together? Remember that? He didn't forget that. Joab held a grudge. He had not forgotten that. It was revenge there. Let me stop right there. Hebron was a place of protection. Hebron was actually called at times a refuge city. You see? It was a refuge city. Abner did not get killed. Abner did not meet his demise until Abner walked outside of the protection of the city. Do the math. If Abner would have stayed inside the city, this could have never happened. But he stepped out of the place of protection. He stepped out of the place of safety. Dear friends, I love you as I tell you today. Don't step out the protection of the city. Don't step out the protection. Don't move away from the protection of the city. He was there, and he was killed. And that knife went up under him, up his rib cage, and he was gone. Come on, man. Hey, pal, come on. What's been going on? Catch me up. What's going on? And they get around and say, he's gone. That was a foolish move. I'm going to prove you it's a foolish move, because David called it a foolish move later on. So David hears about it. And he said, now it's David's turn to make a vow. He said, I vow by the Lord that I and my kingdom are forever innocent of this crime against Abner. Joab and his family, he's hanging it where it belongs. Joab and his family, they're the guilty ones. May the family of Joab be cursed in every generation with a man who has open sores or leprosy, or who walks on crutches, or dies by the sword, or begs for food. He put this on top of him. Put it on him. So Joab and his brother killed Abner because Abner had killed their brother. What's going on here? He's promoting himself. He's jockeying for position again. Again, every move is calculated. But as David did, even though Saul had been evil to him and mean to him and abusive to him, he honored him. And that was, he gave honor to whom honor was due, even though he was a flawed person. And David said to Joab, he said, let me tell you something. We're going to mourn Abner. And the king began to mourn. And the king ripped his garments. And the word says they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king of all the people wept by the graveside. Now notice this here. At the same time, he is speaking. This guy was flawed as he was. He was trying to bring the kingdom together. In verse 33, David is singing another funeral song. A little bit different, however, than the song he sang for Saul. Watch this. And the king, this verse 33, the king sang his funeral song for Abner. He said, should Abner have died as a fool dies? What do you mean? You're mourning him and you're calling him a fool? Why? He left the city of refuge. He stepped out of protection. He was vulnerable. He wasn't paying attention. That was dying as a fool. He said, your hands were not bound. Your feet were not even chained. No, you were murdered. You were the victim of a wicked plot. That's the end of verse 34 right there. And the story says all the people wept for him. David even refused to eat. David made a vow, may God strike me, even kill me, if I eat anything before sundown. This pleased the people. They saw him, and that was a sincere sorrow. In fact, at this point, he was making all the moves that were right. He was following God, obviously. These moves, the word said, every move pleased the people. The people realized David was not responsible. The story continues in verse 38. He said to his officials, he said, you need to realize a great, great commander has fallen today. But what about those other guys? At the end of verse 39, he said, so may the Lord repay these evil men for their evil deeds. In fact, one translation, may Joab be repaid for his wickedness. Flesh move got him in trouble. The word's out. Joab's loose. He's killing people. The next chapter opens up in verse 1. It says, when Ishbosheth, Saul's son, learned about Abner's death at Hebron, he lost all courage. Because the leader lost all courage, all of Israel were paralyzed with fear. The story goes on to tell that there were two brothers in the group. And you think that's not important because verse 6 has a very unusual story. I mean, verse 4, right in the middle of all of this, right in the middle of the story of Ishbosheth, and all these members of his parties, and right in the middle of it, verse 4 says, Saul's son Jonathan had a son named Mephibosheth. He was crippled as a child. He was 5 years old. When the report came from Jezreel that Saul and Jonathan had been killed in the battle, the child's nurse heard the news. She picked him up. She began to run, began to flee, but hurried away. She dropped him, and he became crippled, likely trampled, either by a horse or a chariot or something like that. Now that is a. Do you remember the story we told about the family that moved to another town, and then when the king showed up at that other town, the wife killed him. Remember that story when you thought it was just a real estate move, God had it planned. All right, just remember that it has nothing to do with today. So one day, I'm telling you, you're going to see later. One day, two of the guys, Rechab and Benaiah, they went to Ishbosheth's house around noon, and he's taking a nap. Now, remember the word said that he was paralyzed in fear. Therefore, he was perceived as a weak leader. There was unrest. People were doing really going to their own devices right there. And in verse number 7, they went into the house. They found him sleeping on the bed. They struck him. They killed him. They cut off his head. They took his head, fled across the Jordan. They arrived at Hebron. They presented his head to David. Now watch this. Have we seen these scenarios before? Over and over. Hey, look, here's what we've done. David, here's one way to get ahead. Here's what we've done. Here's what we've done. This is the son of your enemy Saul who tried to kill you. Now they forgot that David had extolled Saul even in his death and Jonathan. And we did this for you. Is that God guiding them? No, that's their flesh. He said, hey, look, this is the guy. By the way, we've all got people that will side up to us sometimes. Boy, can I write a book on this stuff. And I've got to say it so thinly because you start trying to find people right now. No, that will side up to you about so-and-so, but they're the ones working. They're the ones. The one who comes to you, he's in on it. That's in Proverbs 2. He said, here he is. Today the Lord has given and they'll say it spiritually. Today, my Lord, the king, you've received, this is finally it, you've received revenge on Saul and his entire family. People who aren't listening to God never learn. Go all the way back to the first excuse, the woman you gave me. No, I told you, I don't want your excuse. Well, it was in his kids next. Because Abel said, look at this sacrifice. I'm giving you part of my crop. I'm doing all. He said, no, I didn't ask for that. How many of you want to give God something that he didn't ask for? Or better yet, Samuel shows up to Saul and said, what did you do? He said, I killed all these people. And all of a sudden he hears in the back, well, what's the bleating of the sheep that I hear back there? Well, we saved it for God. We saved it for you. We knew. That's not what I said to do. It's not what God wanted. And David says to these two, he said, the Lord who saves me from all my enemies is my witness. I'm not going to read all of it right now. but it is kind of, well, let's read it, because I'm going to take you, I'm sending you out in a second. He said, someone once told me, I love that line, someone once told me, someone once, all right, rewind, remember the Amalekite kid that came stumbling into the deal? The Amalekite kid, someone told me Saul is dead. He thought he was bringing me good news, but I killed that sucker. I killed him at Ziklag. And he's saying it out real loud. He said, and that's the reward I gave him for his news. Now, if you remember, last week we took just a brief moment to say, then the others that came and took down the desecrated bodies of Saul and Jonathan that were nailed to the gate and brought them and buried them together, he honored them. He knew the difference. He said, how much more, verse 11, should I reward evil men who have killed an innocent man in his own house, in his own bed? Shouldn't I hold you responsible for his blood and rid the earth of you? You just don't want to hear anybody telling you that. I'm going to rid the earth of you. David looks over at his young men, kill him. And they did. That's just pretty quick. There's no waiting 8 years. He's not supporting him for 25 years. There's no there. We're going to get. No, kill them. And they did. This is swift justice. This is there. They didn't just kill them. We're going to send a lesson to everybody. They cut off their hands. They cut off their feet. They hung their bodies beside the pool in Hebron. Then they took Ishbosheth's head and buried it in Abner's tomb in Hebron. You know, the very things that the evil people did that they sowed against Saul and Jonathan, it was reproduced as they hung on that wall without their hands and their feet or their heads. A lot to unpack here, isn't it? Nobody's going to be skipping out. I was so encouraged Sunday morning. That was so good. I really needed to hear that. But you do need to know this story, that God can take seeming innocuous things in a story that we read, and starting next week, you're going to see everything start to fall in place, and you go, that's why that happened. I love that they put the one statement there where David said, you know, there was once a time. Every one of you have, there was once a time, and it can be good. We want to hear negative all the time. Everything we're going through, we tell. But have you told God about all the good things that he's done? Have you reminded God about all the blessings and all the good things he has done? Come on, do people talk about how many people sick? I wonder how many people are well right now. How many people did not die or not dying right now? Some of you have fought hell and gone to the edge of it, and you've come back strong with a high hand. I encourage you today. This is the story we're telling right now. But the thread through the whole thing, when we inquire of the Lord, things are a whole lot different in our lives. Let's stand.